There's a great deal of anxiety in this country about the decline of the church. The fastest growing religion is those claiming to have no religion at all, and I think many are afraid that the church, once so proud and mighty, is becoming an irrelevant relic. Churches, especially progressive churches, worry that they will be lone voices in a land that does not know God anymore. What will the church be in the 21st century? What future can there be for this institution? It's a big question, too big to take straight on, so I'm going to start by telling a story. It's the story that Bob read for us so wonderfully. It's the story of a priest of the Lord and how he came to be the only priest in all of Israel. Now, the priest in question is just an ordinary priest. He would preside at the altar and lead the people in worship and teach them about the laws that governed the moral landscape of Israel. This priest was so ordinary, in fact, that the Bible remembers neither his name nor anything else about him other than that he was a priest of the Lord. But this ordinary priest did not live in ordinary times. No, he lived during a time in which the people of God were divided into two nations, led by two kings. There was Judah in the south, with its capital in Jerusalem, and then there was Israel in the north, with its capital in Samaria. Our ordinary priest lived in the north, in Israel, and in Israel, things were not going well. In his lifetime, our ordinary priest had seen the worship of the Lord falling by the wayside in Israel. There were other gods around to be worshipped after all, gods like Baal. And to worship Baal was easy. It just required leaving a little grain or wine here and there at the sacred high places. And if you did, it was said, you would reap many times what you had given up in material prosperity. It didn't matter that Baal was not real, because Baal was offering a scheme that people wanted to be true. Worship Baal and you'll get rich. Simple, easy. Worshipping the Lord, on the other hand, it was a whole way of life. It required generosity to the poor and integrity between what you said and did and self-sacrifice in service of the greater good. Not simple, not easy. But oh, could it be sweet to live among people who were walking together in the ways of the Lord. It would mean living in a place that could be a beacon of hope for what human life could be. When people walked together in the ways of the Lord, there would be equality between people, and there would be security for the tragedy struck, and comfort for the mourning, and healing for the sick, and reconciliation where there was wrongdoing. It is good. It is good to walk together in the ways of God. Yet, even so, year after year, our ordinary priest saw the temple grow sparse and empty. The people chased after idols, false gods that offered nothing really but a get-rich-quick scheme. And the people began to forget who God is. And they began to forget who they were. In worshiping an idol of materialism, they became materialistic, forgetting that to be chosen means to be chosen for service to others. Forgetting that to be blessed means great responsibility toward your neighbors, not the hoarding of private wealth. This social order of idol worship taught each person to look out only for themselves, to do nothing unless it benefited them personally, to sacrifice nothing unless it was in down payment on a future reward. Year after year, our ordinary priest saw the country become worse and worse, pettier and pettier, as it was consumed by idol worship and its small-minded individualism. And so, when the end came, that came suddenly and like a cleansing rain. Shalmaneser, fifth of his name, king of the Assyrian Empire. When Shalmaneser came marching in with his army, a few were filthy rich and most were filthy poor, and there is nothing special or worth protecting about that. You can find that any place. And so the people of Israel, once so strong, once so proud in defending their land, simply folded. Matchless Shalmaneser came like a trumpet blast, and on the holy mountain and in all Israel, the people shook and trembled, for the day of the Lord had come. That great and powerful army marched. Their like has never been, not of old nor ever yet to come, drawn up for battle like a map. The sun and moon were darkened, and the stars withdrew their light. It was a day of darkness, a day of clouds and smoke. Before that army, warriors fled in anguish, and every face grew pale with the rumbling of chariots. They burst past weapons, climbed the walls, and overwhelmed the land. The people, all led captive, not a single one escaped, not one matchless Shalmaneser, like a sword in God's own hand. The people of Israel were rounded up, men, women, and children alike, and all sent into exile, sent to live as aliens in lands at the very heart of the empire that had conquered them. Our ordinary priest was no exception. He was sent to live in exile along with every other inhabitant of Israel, and in their place, the king of Assyria sent settlers from other lands, people who were loyal only to him. So in one fell swoop, the people of Israel were driven out of their land and replaced by people who had never even heard of the Lord. That might have been the end of the story. But exile in a foreign empire was not, it turns out, going to be the fate of our ordinary priest. One day, the ordinary priest ran into his fate. Perhaps it was in the street, seized by guards who asked him, "Are you a priest of the God of Israel?" "Yes." And so they dragged him to the palace, into the throne room, pushing him on his knees down before the king, before Shalmaneser, the king of Assyria. The king looked at him and asked him, "Are you a priest of the God of Israel?" "Yes," he replied. "Do you know the laws of the God of Israel?" "Yes, of course." What the king said next would change his life forever. "The God of your land is angry. Every day my subjects there are being attacked by lions. None of my subjects know how to worship the God of your land, and so the lions have attacked and killed many people. They do not know how to appease your God. They do not know the laws of the God of the land. So I am sending you back. I am sending you back to the land of Israel. You will teach my subjects how to worship the Lord." I wonder if he took this as good news, to be sent back home to a place that was no longer home, to live among a people who were not his own people. I wonder if he was happy, or if his response was, "Wait, what's this about lions?" He was just an ordinary priest, and he was going to be the one and only priest in all of the land of Israel. If people were to know the Lord there anymore, he would have to be the one to show them. It must have pushed him. It must have pushed him to find new ways of being a priest, pushing him beyond what he ever thought the duties of a priest might have been. It must have pushed him to find new recruits, new followers from among those he never would have considered before. And I think he had one thing, one critical thing going for him that allowed him to do this work. He was living among a people who had never even heard of the Lord. They didn't know God at all. And so every single time that he would tell someone about how good and sweet it is to walk together in God's ways, every time he would tell them those truths, they would be hearing it for the first time. The power of that. That ordinary priest, living in a land that did not know the Lord anymore, needing to bear witness to God in new ways, to be a priest in ways never imagined, that priest is you. That priest is you. And in each of you, if there is to be a future for the church, it lies in you. You see, this country is full of the worship of false gods. That is all our fellows know. The worship of money and beauty and fame and youth and political parties and the free market with its magic invisible hand, constructs of the human mind, creations of our imagination. These things are worshipped. They are idols that even those who claim to have no religion know enough to bow down before. The bad news is that idol worship has become the mainstream. But the good news is that the church is no longer cursed with being mainstream. No longer are our best stories and our most compelling reasons for existence simply old hat known from long ago, absorbed perhaps through the water. No more. No more do people know what it means to walk in the ways of God. They do not know. They don't know that to walk in the ways of God together means being free from shame. Means being free from shame, knowing that you're created in the image of God and good as God has made you. It means being free from shame over sexual orientation or gender expression, and no one can shame you over those things again. It means being able to build up just structures for society and find that your own humanity is ennobled in the process. People don't know. They don't know that to walk together in God's ways means that the tyrants and potentates of the world cannot threaten you anymore. They cannot frighten you anymore because their only weapon, the only weapon at hand, that of death, has been blunted, made into a show prop over 2 millennia ago. We cannot be threatened. You are a priest of the Lord, living in a country of people hungry for they don't know what. And you, O priest of the Lord, you have a fresh start. You have a blank canvas, a big sheet of crisp construction paper, and a brand new red crayon, because every time that you tell someone, every time that you show someone the truth of how good it is to walk with God, they are seeing it for the first time, for the very first time. The power of that. And there are so very many ways for you to be a priest. You do not have to be content by the old ways. You do not have to be content by the old models. People have forgotten them. How can they bind you? Why would God be content with merely one rigid form of priesthood into which everyone's talents and gifts must be twisted and conformed? Why would God be content with that when the alternative is so much greater, that priesthood would be a malleable vestment, one that can be shaped to fit your gifts? Yours can be a priesthood of art, of painting truths that are too fundamental to be circumscribed by reason's rigid compass. Yours could be a priesthood of high finance, turning mutual funds to the service of mutual accountability. Yours could be a priesthood of parenting, teaching your children to reject the evil and choose the good. Yours could be a priesthood of medicine, working for months and even years to heal wounds that can be opened in a moment. Yours can be a priesthood of voting, seeking to harness democracy's power and rein in the worst excesses of greed and consumption. Yours could be a priesthood of working for Planned Parenthood, facing down threats so that frightened women need not do so. Your priestly vocation can be so very many things, but there is one thing it cannot be, and that is hidden. Not anymore. Can we hide our light beneath a barrel? Not in this century. Not among people who do not know. Remember, when you go from this place, that you are a priest of the Lord, a stranger walking through a strange land. So do justice and love kindness and walk humbly with your God. Let your light so shine before others that they see your good works and give glory to our Mother who is in heaven. Show to everyone who you meet how good and sweet it is when people walk together in the ways of the Lord. That is the way forward for the church in the 21st century. That has always been the way forward for the church. And if there is to be a church in 100 years, it is yours to build.